T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Chris, let's go. What I love is that our guests now, there's some of them that we know so well that we can just give them their own music. We can let Neil Peart go crazy because we know how Bruce Miles feels. It's always nice when we can treat a guest that way. Bruce Miles joins me here on The Score. Hey, Bruce.
I am in the spirit of radio, I got to tell you.
Yeah, well, we're glad that we put you in the right frame of mind to join us for a few minutes. How are things?
Oh, things are great. You know, what a time to be a sports fan, isn't it? All this NBA stuff, the Blackhawks signing Cam Ward, the Cubs, the White Sox, and one of my favorites, the World Cup. What a time to be a sports fan.
Are you messing with me, or are you actually out there watching the World Cup, Bruce?
I am watching every minute of it that I can watch. I'm going to tell you something. Fox Sports has the replay of today's Belgium-Japan game on. The second half will be coming on. If you like hockey, if you like basketball, the winning goal for Belgium was as good as a rush up ice or as good as a fast break. No, I'm a big Premier League fan and European soccer fan, so the World Cup is all good.
Who's your Prem League team?
Manchester City.
Okay, so we can't be friends anymore. All right, that's fine. That's okay. I still would like to have you on the show. I'm an Arsenal supporter.
I know that, Lawrence.
So okay, but we can't be friends on that, but at least we both enjoy soccer, and it's fun. You know what's great? Like, for you today, like, having a no-Cubs game to cover, and there being great, like, world-class sports on in the middle of the day.
Oh, you can't beat that. And the thing I like about the Premier League is that in the wintertime, it's on Saturday and Sunday morning. So we get up here, put the coffee on, watch a couple of games, and you still got the whole day ahead of you.
Yeah, you can watch NFL after that if you want. But yes, I'm one of those crazy people too, Bruce. I enjoy a good 6:45 kickoff on a Saturday morning. Like, that's fun for me. To watch what's going on in the Prem League or in the Bundesliga. It's fun. It is a ton of fun. So I'm glad that you like it. I'm glad. Well, let me get back to what you do for a living, and that's covering baseball. What was covering the last three games like for you?
Well, first of all, personally, it was hot. It was hot as blazes out there. You could sweat just sitting there in the press box, and my good friend Paul Sullivan of the Tribune brought a thermometer yesterday, and man, that thing was inching up near 100. But the baseball was something else. You know, we as media members a lot of times will complain about the length of games, but a couple of these games were just so much fun to watch. There's a game where the Cubs got 17 singles. Now, that's the last thing you expect to see, but it took a long time to play, but it was entertaining as heck. So it was a mixture of all those things, just trying to survive the heat and then watching some crazy baseball.
Yeah, we saw the Cubs bats kind of come to life and saw them hit, what, like close to 500 or a little over 500 with runners in scoring position. Is that a product of approach or a product of a bad Twins team?
Well, yeah, that's a very good question, and we'll see how it is as we go along here. They've got the Tigers and they've got the Reds. The Reds are a much improved ball club, as the Cubs have found out and the White Sox are finding out. But we'll find out. I think that certain things with the approaches at the plate are clicking. You're seeing more of an emphasis on making hard contact with line drives. Joe Maddon, not a big launch angle guy. He's brought this up without prompting several times, and the guys in the post-game clubhouse yesterday were talking about that too, that they're finding ways to win games without necessarily hitting the home runs, even though you'll take those when they come.
Yeah, I've been in a couple of those press conferences where Joe has gone on screeds about launch angle and other things that bother him as he gets older. Was it so prevalent in John Maley's teaching that it was something that the organization as a whole didn't want all their hitters doing?
Yeah, it was prevalent, but it also won them a World Series a couple of years ago and had gotten them to the NLCS 3 years in a row. So I would hate to denigrate that, and I would hate to think that they, you know, are tossing that aside just because maybe it didn't fit totally with their approach. But Joe is one of those guys that, you know, he likes what Chili Davis is teaching, and he likes the line drives. And what he said is use the whole field. Joe loves opposite field. He loves, you know, going gap to gap. So it was one of those things, you know, that when it was working and they were winning a World Series, you know, they all seemed to like it, but they were shut down late last year by some pretty good pitching. So, you know, we'll see where it goes from here, but I think Joe's made his feelings pretty well clear on this.
What players do you think have benefited the most from this new direction of hitting instruction?
Well, I think the obvious one is Jason Heyward, who got along very well with John Maley and who seems to have a nice rapport with Chili Davis. Joe talked the other day about his hands. He goes, watch his hands. Everything you need to know about Jason Heyward and his improved hitting is in his hands right now, the hand action he's getting with the bat. I think you're seeing a little bit of that with Kyle Schwarber as well. He seemed to be in a really good mood yesterday about some of the hits he's got. He's gone opposite field and hit some singles in addition to just a booming home run the other day. So he's kind of getting the best of both worlds there. But I think Heyward is the most obvious one.
And why do you think he's having the success now? Like, what was it? Just, is it sometimes, you've been around the game long enough, Bruce, is it really just having someone else tell you what you need to hear and it clicking from a personal standpoint?
Yeah, there's part of that, and I think that you're an established veteran like Heyward. There's some things that you don't want to let go because in the past you've had success with him, and maybe some adjustments have been made, or maybe a hitch or two develops in your swing, and you know you don't want to get rid of that. You don't want to get out of that comfort zone a little bit. But I think Chili Davis has found a way, and there were some scouts in spring training who weren't buying it. They're saying there's really nothing new here, but given time, I just think it's that different voice and maybe making Jason believe that, hey, if you do these couple of things, you're going to get the results you want.
When I was there a few weeks ago filling in on pre and post game, I was there one of those days where Heyward wasn't in the lineup, and you could tell that he was unhappy about not being in the lineup. This guy's a professional. He's never going to go crazy about not playing, but is there a feeling of vindication with him now that he's seen some offensive success and you can marry that to what he does on the bases and what he does defensively?
Yeah, you know what? I think he's been asked that in several different ways, and he just says, you know, I'm just going out there to try to have good at-bats no matter what the result of the at-bat is. Just put together a good at-bat, do the things that I've been taught and do the things that I do well, and, you know, the results will take care of themselves. So there might be a little bit of a feeling of vindication, but certainly nothing that he's voiced in that way. I think he's a secure enough guy to know, you know, what he is in the game and the success he's had and been a world champion and been a Gold Glove defender, where I don't think he needs to voice that.
Talking with Bruce Miles, who covers the Cubs for the Daily Herald. You can follow Bruce on Twitter at BruceMiles2112. Outside of John Lester, what's been the struggle for the Cubs pitching staff?
Yeah, Lester's really been the savior here, and they have not had a quality start since he went seven innings on June the 20th, and I can't pound that home enough. When the Cubs get a quality start, they're 25-8. With a 1.4 ERA, and when they don't, they're below 500, like 22-27 with nearly a 6 ERA. It's just been getting starters to go deep into games. You know, Quintana has shown flashes, but nothing really consistent, and Hendricks has been kind of a puzzle. I think it's a case of his mechanics getting off. I really do. I remember a couple of years ago out at Sox Park watching him before a game about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, playing catch off flat ground with then pitching coach Chris Bosio, and then going out on the mound to work on some mechanical things. So I think with with Hendricks, it's more mechanics than anything else. And I think if he can get those ironed out, I think he'll be fine. Montgomery has been a nice revelation. We'll see how long this lasts with him as a starter. And, you know, Chatwood is, we all know the story there about control. It's better the other day, some not. But I just think that they're going to have to get guys going six, seven innings, or else you're going to see the residual negative effect on the bullpen.
Right, and we've already started to see it a little bit where the bullpen at the beginning of the year was one of the strengths of this Cubs team, and now they are just being taxed. And then you add in the injuries to C.J. Edwards and Brandon Morrow. Now Morrow's back, and C.J. will be back soon. But you add those things in, they're asking that bullpen to do a lot of stuff.
They really are, and the only saving grace along those lines is that they've been able to use like a 12 to 14 man bullpen with the Iowa shuttle, because they have now something that Theo Epstein has wanted, and that's a lot of optionable relief pitchers. So when you see a Luke Farrell or a Justin Hancock or a Randy Rosario, who's done a really nice job, or Anthony Bass, who's come up lately and done really well, this is a boon until you can get these guys back. And maybe the little bit of a rest they gave Morrow and then the freak back injury will help at the end of the year where he's a little bit more fresh. And then we'll see how Carl Edwards comes back from the shoulder fatigue. But they need to get those two guys back to take a little bit of the off of Pedro Strop. Dunsing's on the DL, been a rough start to the season for him. But, yeah, the one saving grace is they've had a lot of depth there, and they've gotten good performances from some guys that you might not thought they would have.
What do you expect the Cubs will get from Yu Darvish for the rest of the way?
Boy, at first you got to get him back out there. And, you know, hopefully this latest thing with the elbow impingement and the cortisone injection will set his mind at ease, where he's able to go out and throw it free and easy and have some confidence. I think his confidence was shot. He threw the sim game at Wrigley Field. I watched that, and it looked really good. It looked really crisp, and, you know, the hitters looked to be off balance. The start at South Bend also was very good, but he kept saying he didn't feel 100%. So hopefully this last thing with the medical thing will set his mind at ease. I just think he needs to get his confidence back. This is an established major league pitcher, so this is kind of an odd thing that I really haven't seen a whole lot of in my career, with a veteran pitcher kind of just, you know, losing his confidence. And I don't want to say not wanting to go out there, because that's a pretty serious charge, but, you know, taking this long to get back.
Yeah, and I don't know if I've ever seen this before. You've done this a lot longer than I have. A player go and get a second opinion from another team's doctor. Is that a strange thing, or is that something that happens more often than I believe?
Well, it happens more often than you think. I've seen it earlier in my career where guys would go see maybe the Reds doctor, Dr. Kremchek, or they'd go out to see Lou Yoakum, and guys like that. So it does happen a lot more than you might think, and teams usually give their blessing to this, because if it sets their own players' mind at ease a little bit more, they're all for it. But it does happen.
When is Chris Bryant due to come back, and what do you think he'll be when he comes back?
Well, he's due to come back tomorrow. He's eligible tomorrow. Joe Maddon kind of hinted over the weekend that it might be tomorrow, it might be Wednesday, and we'll see how the shoulder is. And, you know, I don't know how much of an effect getting hit in the helmet had on him and his swing and his confidence at the plate. But I just think that maybe this is a little bit of a reset, a little bit of a reboot. And if he gets back to being what he was, you know, obviously that's MVP caliber type of stuff, but to start trending in that direction, it's only going to be a help. You know, the Cubs are way down from what they've been in home runs, and that's largely because Bryant and Rizzo haven't had the home run production that they've had in years past. Schwarber and Baez are your home run leaders right now with 16, so I think it'll be important for Bryant to start finding that way again. And listen, this guy that loves to play baseball, plays it hard, plays it the right way, so I think it's too early to worry about it, but I think there's a curiosity factor to see what it's going to look like.
How fair is it to wonder if the back injury that got Anthony Rizzo on the DL at the beginning of the season is still bothering him?
Yeah, I think that's always a concern. Guys, you know, teams don't always say, and guys will always say, I don't want to make excuses or I'm fine. But, you know, backs are funny things, and when they go out, it affects your whole body. So, you know, Anthony has shown some flashes. He's had some big hits lately. The power hasn't been there like we've seen. But, that's yeah, and with any of that stuff, it's always fair to at least inquire.
Yeah, I do wonder about that because, you know, back injuries and swings and all of that stuff, they tend to maybe not go together as well as they could. What do you think the Cubs are looking at, and what do you personally think they need to be looking at towards the trade deadline?
Right, and that's coming up quicker than you think. And the one thing is, you know, July 31st, but Theo and Jed have had a way of striking early. They did with Quintana last year. They did, you know, a few years ago at the end of the rebuild when they got Addison Russell for Samardzija. So they struck early in July or mid-July with some of these deals. So, you know, I'm looking for them to try to do that again, get out there early. But I have to think it's got to be a starting pitcher when the rotation is this inconsistent and you're expecting to make the postseason and you've got to fend off Milwaukee and try to win the division and not play in that wild card game. You've got to have a rotation, at least 1 through 4, if not 1 through 5, clicking on all cylinders. So I think that they're going to be looking for starting pitching. They'll monitor the bullpen to see if there's any trouble spots there and, you know, maybe pick up a veteran reliever. But I think it's pitching all the way with the Cubs and what they're going to be looking for.
What's been the most fun part of covering the Cubs this year?
Oh, I'll tell you, it's just been just going out and not knowing what you're going to see every day. To me, most fun, in a perverse way, is watching Twitter when Joe changes the lineup or whatever and Twitter goes crazy and, you know, Joe says that, you know, set lineups are the thing of dinosaurs. So to me, it's going out there every day, not knowing what we're going to see. But if you want to, I mean, how can you not like watching Javier Baez on a daily basis? The guy is an absolute magician. I put a tweet out on Saturday and it went just crazy. I said, instead of a home run derby at the All-Star thing, why don't they just have Javi do magic tricks for an hour?
Yeah, have him do like his own skills competition.
Yeah, by himself, hitting, base running, tagging, you know, diving for balls. But, I mean, watching him has been certainly the most fun thing. But I've covered the game for so long that I still have this enthusiasm. I still have this kind of wonderment that every day I'm going to go out there and see something that I haven't ever seen before.
Yeah, and they give you that. I wanted to follow up a little bit, Bruce. We're talking with Bruce Miles of the Daily Herald. Follow him on Twitter at BruceMiles2112. Because I get a lot of phone calls. I know that you listen to the show occasionally about the lineup and the effect on the players that them not being in the lineup in the same spot the next day. You're in that clubhouse. You talk to these guys every day. What do they say to Joe flipping lineups and not having guys necessarily in a set spot?
Yeah, I think that the fan reaction is much more overstated than it is with the players. This is the fourth year Joe Maddon has been here, and he's had a lot of these players for all 4 years. So they know how he operates. They've been to the playoffs and won a World Series with these machinations that he does. They're pretty much accepting of it. I'm sure that if you asked every player in the major leagues, they'd like to maybe be in a set spot every day. Baseball in the 21st century doesn't happen that way, and nor should it. If you're running a set lineup out there every day, you're derelicting your duties because you're not taking a look at matchups. You're not putting your players necessarily in the best position for them to succeed every day. And the one thing Joe does, he communicates. If Anthony Rizzo is going to bat leadoff, if Chris Bryant is going to bat leadoff, Joe tells them by text or phone call the day before, or if it's a night game, no later than that morning. So the players have pretty much come to expect it. And I say, you look around the league, every manager is doing it. I think a fan base thinks that their team is the only one that has these issues.
What do you think of Milwaukee?
I like their offense a lot. I think I'm pretty impressed by the way that they're hanging in there. The acquisitions of Kane and Yelich in the offseason, I think, were really brilliant moves. If I were a Brewers fan, I was really disappointed that they didn't try to get a Jake Arrieta or an Alex Cobb. And I still think that the rotation still might be the Achilles heel up there that prevents them from winning the division. I certainly think that they're a playoff caliber team. But the only thing that I might be worried about if I'm a Brewers fan is, you know, do they have enough in the starting rotation? Their bullpen is certainly good, but I'm very impressed with them. I'm impressed with the way they've hung in there, and I don't think they're going away.
Bruce, I appreciate the time and your information and your friendship. Thanks for jumping on the show.
Always my pleasure, Lawrence. I'll see you out at the ballpark soon.
You got it. That's Bruce Miles, who covers the Cubs for the Daily Herald. This segment being brought to you by Spot Hero. And finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about Yu Darvish. There was an interview with Theo Epstein today on The Score, and a big portion of it was about Yu Darvish. I want to share that with you, and then I want to talk about it. We'll do that next here on The Score. Northwestern football, the Wildcats are coming off a 10-win season. They host Michigan, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Notre Dame, and more this fall at Ryan Field. Season and single-game tickets are on sale now at nusports.com. Hawk would call this a beautiful night in the city. Beautiful. It's perfect out there today. Today's one of those, like, tonight's one of those nights where I wish, I texted my wife, I was like, tonight's one of those nights where I wish I had the night off. Like, I wish we could be out, like, walking on the lakefront or something. I mean, I guess technically we can after I'm done, but, you know, it'd be nice to go out and have dinner. So I appreciate you making us your choice in the car, that you're listening to the show. We do it for you. We like to get you from wherever it is to wherever it is you're going. Get you there in one piece. Have a little fun. Learn something. Have some good conversation. After, I felt like the last 3 days I've pretty much been trapped inside. Although I did go see The Incredibles. Man, why last the girl so thick though? Like, why they draw her so thick? Another thing, if you have not, you had a thought on this, Herbie?
No, I didn't. Okay. I mean, I'm just saying, like, parents maybe, you know, the male side.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe they're trying to get a whole new audience to go see The Incredibles. That's what it seemed like.
I mean, there we got Jim Tomey there.
He does look, Mr. Incredible looks exactly like Jim Tomey. Exactly like him. There's a short before the movie called Bow. It is going to make you cry. Like, it's going to make you text your mom or call your mom. I'm just telling you. Be ready for it. Because I wasn't ready. No one warned me, and I wasn't ready. And I was sitting there in the theater just like, oh, my God. Like, just all messed up. So, you know, be ready. Take your mom to it. And she will hit you because it will be exactly what she probably went through with you at some point. Just saying. All right, back to the baseball. I have more on The Incredibles later. Earlier today, Theo Epstein was on the station. He was on the afternoon show. You know me. I like when Theo comes on the station because you learn a lot. There was a good stretch in this interview where they spent a lot of time talking about Yu Darvish. And I thought there were some good follow-up questions in here by both Dan and Danny. So I want you to take a listen to it. And then I want to ask you a question about our approach to athletes, what we think athletes are and what we think athletes should be. It started off with the guys trying to figure out if there was any new news that Theo had on Yu Darvish.
No, nothing concrete yet. He's, you know, he just what came out initially, with the impingement in the elbow and getting treatment for that and no throw for about 5 days, but it's really all about how he feels when he gets through that period of no throw, and that'll help us dictate the next plan of action.
Obviously, the actions on the field matter more than what any of these guys say off the field, but his comments in the LA Times took us by surprise. Did you know that he had considered retirement before he joined the Dodgers?
Yeah, he had actually said that publicly before. He said that when he was with LA, and that was what one of the topics, you know, when we met was just kind of talking through
his feelings about baseball and what he was looking for with, you know, in the right kind of clubhouse, the right kind of organization, the right kind of environment for him to continue to love the game and want to compete. So that was, I think he was looking for a particular kind of fit. I think he actually found it in the Cubs. It's just on the field hasn't gone the way he's wanted so far.
It's easy to take from some of the comments you has made, Theo, that the kid, he's not a kid anymore, but your $126 million athlete is a little bit fragile. Is that unfair in your opinion?
I think he's human, and I think he's a little bit more open than most, and I also think there's a little bit of a language issue where things don't always come across the way they're translated, but he's certainly human, and I'm not going to penalize him for that. I think part of the way people get over adversity or critical moments in their life is by talking about them and sharing them with people and connecting with them. And so if that's going to help him, continue to face challenges and in the case of, say, the World Series, overcome them next time, then good for him. I think people should be encouraged to open up. There's more than one way to compete. And there's more than one way to handle emotions. And, you know, when you talk to him about the World Series, he'll say, yeah, that was obviously tough, really tough. I feel like I let everybody down. But I've been through worse on the field. I've been through worse off the field. And I've come through. And that's the way I'm looking at this. It's not like it dominates his day or his mindset. He's just frustrated because he hasn't been able to show his teammates and his fans what he can do when dominating every day. But I think that lies ahead, and I think there'll be a lot less talk about fragility once he's out there performing. That's usually the way it works.
So none of the stuff, like there was the Chris Jimenez story about how he thinks the Chicago fans hate him.
No, that was just flat wrong. Yeah, Jimenez has apologized. He got that wrong. I think he wants to show people what he can do. He wants, like anyone else, he wants to please his coworkers and his employers and the fans. And the fact that he hasn't been able to do that yet is a point of frustration for him. That's where that story or quote should have began and ended.
Going back a minute or so, you used the word human to describe Darvish, and I think that's something that escapes us from time to time, escapes baseball fans. These guys are not robots. And I gave credit to the White Sox a few years ago. They were the first club in town to employ a team psychologist. And Theo, if you can, I'd love to hear you illuminate how baseball has evolved at the highest levels in your front office in terms of providing trained therapists, not pitching coaches, because that Larry Rothschild didn't work much for Carlos Zambrano, but getting a professional staff in place. How has that changed during your time in the league?
I'll address that broadly. I mean, I think this is my 27th year in baseball. And when I first started, if a player admitted that he was seeing a sports psychologist, he was often stigmatized and it kept a lot of people from reaching out for help or from even from talking about it. And about 10, 15 years ago, that really changed. And the ability to provide strong psychological help and proper mental skills training became viewed as a competitive advantage the same way physical training is viewed as a competitive advantage, and resources around fine-tuning your body shouldn't be looked at any differently than resources about fine-tuning your mind. And so we're one of the vast majority of teams that have poured a lot of resources into mental skills departments and try to find some resource for every player to help him fine-tune his mental game, whether it's during a period of crisis away from the field or during a period on the field when he's just looking to improve his routine and preparation. So it really touches everything that we do, and it's universal, really, across sports and across just about any business. The ability to be prepared and develop coping skills and mental skills, mental training that will help you respond to adversity and help you develop and maintain a growth mindset is, that's a key competitive advantage.
That was Theo Epstein on the afternoon show earlier today. I really enjoyed that portion. The whole interview is really good, but I enjoyed that portion of the interview because it's something that we talked about a little bit last week, and I wanted to see if we could continue and have a mature conversation about some of this stuff. Why is it that we, and I'm fans and media, why is it that we feel like we have license to deem someone fragile or soft? And we love to use kind of cold words with this to try and make someone lesser than what they are. Theo used the word human. And I'm not sure if we are at a point where we have let go of some of the things, the preconceived notions of what an athlete is, and honestly, like what a man is, like those sorts of things. I don't know if we've let any of that stuff go. And so we see something that looks out of the norm. The way that Yu Darvish is approaching essentially what is his livelihood. I would get frustrated when people said this about Derrick Rose too, and I understand that Derrick Rose seemed, there's no language barrier issue there. That there aren't things that aren't necessarily lost in translation like they might be if Darvish is trying to express himself. But that being said, anyone who is trying to make sure that they are going to have the best possible physical life is someone that I think needs to be paid attention to. If your job is to throw, if the whole reason that you've got the $126 million is because of what you're able to do with a baseball, then wouldn't it behoove you to take care of that? To be a little bit careful and to not rush back and put yourself in a position where you're not going to be able to do your best for as long as possible. I talk about the Puritan work ethic a lot on this show because I know that it's ingrained in us. This idea of we need to push through some of this adversity. And I think that there are times for that. I think there are times in a lot of our lives on a daily basis where we have to make some of those decisions. But I also think that a bunch of us need to take mental health days too. I think a bunch of us could benefit from being more open about the things that bother us, being more open about the things that scare us, and being more open about, I just can't go today. It's almost like we're all looking for that pat on the back of validation of, well, I toughed it out. I mean, I know I'm like that. There was a stretch a few years ago where I want to say I worked like 26 days in a row or something stupid like that. And I mean, it's great. It's great when your teammates know that they can rely on you, know that you have their best interests at heart along with your own. But I also think that it's important for all of us to take a look at the mosaic and say, are we really benefiting ourselves when we push through everything? There's some days where you just have to let some of it go and let some of it go emotionally. It's a hard thing. I know I can only speak for men since I am a cisgender man. I can only speak for cisgender men. But the boxes that we put ourselves in and what we describe as masculinity, I think that we need to pay closer attention to that. If you are feeling anxiety yes, in some cases, the best option is to push through it. In some cases, the best option is to pull the covers over your head and regroup, or go take a walk, or go hit a punching bag for 15 minutes. Like, one of my go-tos is going to the batting cage. Like, unless it's some sort of field trip that I'm going on with the team, if you hear I was at the batting cage, you can bet your money that I had a bleeping bad day and I needed to go let off some steam. But we mythologize athletes as overcoming obstacles. Like, we love that story. We love that narrative. And I agree, it is impressive when you see someone who can overcome odds, when you see someone come back from an injury and they are a great player again. But I also think that there are other ways to get to that point. And we should be mindful that not everyone's process is cookie cutter. What I do to get myself back to neutral might not be what you do. And my thing is that if you're not hurting anyone, getting yourself back to neutral, then it's all good. I'm trying to be more careful with it, with how we describe players. The words that we use to denote whether a player is a tough guy or... Because you don't know. In the case of Darvish, we're talking about a guy who rehabbed through Tommy John surgery. That is hard. And it makes me uncomfortable to question his toughness after doing that. And I applaud people that can say that they need help. And just from a physical standpoint, I applaud someone who is willing to go get a second opinion. This is a little bit of a wider issue, but I think patients don't do that enough. I'm not saying go and find the answer that you want. I'm saying that if you're unclear, if your medical provider is unclear, or you don't click, or you don't understand the treatment steps that they want to put you through, then yes, you should go get a second, or maybe in some cases a third opinion on something. I applaud Darvish for that. If he felt he wasn't on the same page with the Cubs doctors, and maybe all he got from the doctor down in Texas was, you know what, I'm looking at what they want you to do, and I agree with it. And he was like, okay. And that's what he needed. I think we need to be more mindful. I'm not saying that you can't have your opinion. I'm just saying that maybe we need to start understanding that we are talking about human beings and not robots, even though we try to take the statistics and turn them into that, that sometimes the emotional state of a person may have an effect on what they are as a player. Just like it may have an effect on what you do when you go to work. And you do try to battle through it, but everyone's battle is different. If you'd like to jump in and talk about it, you're more than welcome to. 312-644-6767. You can also text us. 670-11 is the way that you can do that. My name is Lawrence Holmes, and you're listening to The Score. At 9 o'clock, we are going to talk some World Cup soccer. I'm excited about that. I was watching the matches earlier today. Looking forward to it. Having a little conversation about you, Darvish, and some of the things that Theo Epstein said, and I think to a certain extent, Theo did a great job of humanizing Darvish. As Darvish tried to humanize himself, but in some circles is mocked for doing it. And I think that we can do a better job of trying to understand some of this stuff, not just for Darvish, but for ourselves. Think about how many times, like you're not okay, and someone's like, you all right? And you're like, oh, I'm fine, fine, I'm fine. And you try to work through it. And again, in some cases, that can be good. That can be a really good thing. But in some cases, you need to take a day off. In some cases, you need to scream into a pillow. In some cases, you need to cry. I was asking people today on Twitter, like, how much am I going to cry at that Mr. Rogers movie that's out? And I'm going. I'm going to go see that. I'm going to go see that genuinely decent man and the retrospective on his life. And I know I'm going to tear up, and I'm going to enjoy it. Some of that stuff needs to come out. And I think from a fan perspective, you should look at it this way. With the advances that we have had in the psychology of sport, you should look at that might be another way to spike the production of a player. If you can get through to them in a way that you haven't been able to get through to someone else. A couple of text messages that came in. I appreciate the support for people who enjoy the conversation, even the ones who disagree. But a texter said, we need to stop lying. We all feel the way you does at one time or another. We just lie and cover it up and repress it in order to remain, quote unquote, a man. Yeah. We do that a lot. We're very comfortable in some of our gender roles. I mean, I know I do this stuff with my wife. I know that I'm a crazy person when it comes to like saving money and always waiting for the other shoe to drop, waiting for the bad thing that's coming instead of just kind of enjoying what's happening. I'm a planner. I'm a busy bee. And there are times where I wish I could get out of that mental space. Let's go out to Peoria and talk with Phil. Hey, Phil, you're on the score.
Hey, Lawrence. I'm actually driving back from taking a mental health day right now, and I thought I should give you a call and just kind of chime in that's really important. You know, especially if you've got any introvert tendencies or anything like that, you just need sometimes to decompress, and it helps a lot.
100%. I appreciate the phone call. I'm glad you were listening out there, Phil. One of the reasons that I'm in radio, and it's funny, I see Dean Davis walking into the studio, and I actually was talking to them about this on their podcast. It's a good podcast, by the way. About the idea that used to be back in the day, an introvert could have this job. It used to be you didn't know who was on the other side of a microphone. In some cases today, you still don't. But this was the perfect place for a person to go run and hide. Like, I have thoughts, but I'm shy. So I'll be on the radio instead of being on the television. But now, in media, everyone is everything. You're going to be on TV. You're going to be on a podcast. You're going to be in print. But there used to be a little bit more anonymity into it. And I think that's why you had a lot of guys creating characters and stuff on air. And like, I get uncomfortable around crowds now, like real uncomfortable. And some days I fight through it, and some days I'm like, I'm out. Or if I know like I have an event that I have to be at, like it's a lot to work through some of that stuff. Hey, Jeff, you're on the score.
Hey, you are doing a fantastic job of one understanding what Theo was trying to say, but as I told your guy who receives the calls, if you ever get let go from the score, I'll pay you $1,000 an hour just to sit on your couch and have you help me.
Oh, well, great. I think I want to quit the score right now if that is the job offer, and we could work out a thing where we talk an hour. Well, he said $1,000 an hour, so we could have three sessions a week, and we'd be good to go. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah,
seriously, though, you are doing a great job of really bringing a true perspective on what athletes go through, what someone like yourself goes through, who has to prepare himself every day to get on the radio and fill 3 hours or 4 hours of time. And I'm just curious, how old are you?
I'm 43. I've been here 20 years. 20? I'm an old man. In an old man's body at this point. But yeah, it's the radio aspect of it is actually at this point for me, I don't mean to say easy, but it's fairly easy. TV is getting more comfortable by the minute. But yeah, out in public, like it's one thing, reasons I hate going to concerts. Like it's too much. There's too much happening. People aren't moving. It's too much. I'm starting to get that way with races now, too. I really like running. And I enjoy the idea of a 5K or a 10K or an 8K. But you know what I hate? I hate the corral. I hate it. It drives me insane. I'm just waiting for the race to start, and then the race will start. And then, you know, I always try to stay to the right because I know I'm not very fast. There's so many people that are even slower than I am, and they are not helping you out. And you just feel claustrophobic. So now, I used to be really crazy about my times in these races that I would run. Because I am competitive. I'm very competitive. And then I realized that I was going to run my best times by myself. Like, I think one of the reasons that I'm now drawn to running is because it's solitary. How weird is that? And I used to be like a big team sport guy. I love being on team sports. I used to, for the most part, I was captain of every team I've been on. And now I kind of like the, I'm going to go run by myself and leave me alone. Please don't talk to me. I just think that there's a lot that we can learn still on trying to maximize guys' performances and just give the guy a little bit of a break. And try to see it through their eyes. And maybe it turns out that he was right and something is really wrong, or he needs to get to a space where he believes what the doctors are telling him and he fights through it. All right, we'll move on from this serious topic to something ridiculous, and that is the stuff that was going on with Neymar today. Neymar be flopping, but Brazil moves on. Talking World Cup next here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.